Greetings to you once again, my brothers and my sisters in Christ Jesus. I greet you in that name that's above every other name. At the name of Jesus Christ, every knee bows, every tongue confesses, because He, the Lord Jesus Christ, He is Lord. He's above it all, and in Him we live, we move, and we have our being. Ah, yes, and I greet you in the middle of all that takes place on the earth at such a time as this, knowing that He that began a good work in us carries it out to completion as we walk with Him, as we trust in Him, as we look to Him for His direction, His plan, His purpose. And, you know, I've had it's interesting, something that's, I actually feel like it's worth taking a little bit of time because to discuss, you know, social media, social media in and of itself is, it's amazing how it's become weaponized, how there's not really a free dialogue and a free conversation anymore. If you're not aware of the type of censorship and the type of control that's taking place to try to control a narrative and to try to control a particular way of thinking, just dig a little bit, because right now there are companies that are being blackmailed for their ability to even speak, for their links getting broken if they try to put up something that is not approved of content by big tech. It's pretty nefarious what's actually taking place, because if you are going to be able to have an open conversation, if you're going to be able to have an open discussion, if you're going to be able to dig down and find truth, you have to be able to have a public public or private conversation with people, and learn and exchange ideas, and things can get hot, they can get heated, but you get the chance for people to exchange ideas in the world of ideas, and for others to learn. You know, historically, you had that. You had the meeting places, you had the marketplaces, you had the square, you had the places where people would debate. And if you don't preserve those, and the idea of those, and the actuality of those, if you just silence dissent, then what happens is then that conversation goes somewhere else, and what you end up with is an echo chamber of just your own view. And that's not healthy, because that's not how things grow. In the world of science, we talked about this a little bit on our last audio, but in the world of science, every major advancement in science was where somebody learned, and had an inclination that, okay, this is what we've always done, but I think it can be a little bit different based on my observations. And then they change. they try something different. They do an experiment. And very often when they start down a particular scientific path, they're ridiculed for that because it's against convention. And then when they prove it through experimentation, sharing their data, sharing what they've learned, from that point forward, that's where you see then what was once considered not the norm, then it goes forward and people adjust and they say, wait, this actually works. So, you know, there was a time in history where, people would, to cure illnesses, they would have bloodletting and they would let some blood out of the body. I mean, it's just like these are, you know, were considered health practices that are no longer there because people have realized this doesn't work. So, and something else works. So as time goes forward, you have to allow for that conversation. You have to allow for that exchange of ideas. Now, people are accountable for their exchange of ideas. So in the United States, the reason, it's very important to have that First Amendment, which is, the freedom of speech. Now, at the same time, in that freedom of speech, there's consequences for your freedom of speech. If somebody goes into a movie theater and yells fire and somebody gets trampled to death, everybody trying to get out of the theater, there's consequences for doing that. So you have rights, but you also have responsibilities that come with those rights. So I want to talk a little bit about the Second Amendment, the second right that is there inside the United States, which is the right to bear arms. Now, there's a reason that this was put into, actually enframed, you know, enshrined in the founding documents of the country, of the United States, which the United States is a very unique nation in the world. And it's incredible what has been able to come out of that country in just a couple hundred years, you know, a couple hundred years plus, 1700s, the birth of that nation, and moving forward into what we have today. And there's the founding documents of that country were helped set the foundation for that nation, helped set the foundation for what would take place in that land. Now, it's amazing too, in a time of incredible thought control and mind control, how one of the things that's taken place is that people have lost all bearing of history, have also lost their ability to understand just even, you know, what has happened, where things have come from. And, you know, one of my pastors in the States used to say, if you fail to learn the lessons from your history, you're destined to repeat it. You know, it's very true. And if you fail to learn the lessons of from what's come before, you're going to end up having a reoccurrence of the same thing. Now, with the Second Amendment in the United States, as time's gone on, the right to bear arms, I recognize more and more the importance of that right and the reasoning for that right by the founding fathers. Look, this had nothing to do with hunting. You know, this had nothing to do with you know, everything that people have tried to twist it to be something else. This had to do with a responsible citizenry and empowering the responsible citizenry for the times if or when they needed that power in their hands. The United States was formed more than any other country in the world as a nation that put power in the hands of its people, that decentralized power and put it out into the hands of the people, with responsibility, mind you. And the people that came to the United States, it resonated with them, saying they came there for the closest natural example that was available of freedom. You know, that was the United States became the global icon for freedom. And one of the ways that that nation, that freedom was guaranteed, was in the laws that were put in place in the founding of that country. And as a republic, so listen, the United States is not a democracy. It is a republic. You know, when people pledge allegiance, I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands, right? One nation under God with life and liberty, you know, justice for all. Okay, what is a republic? oh, man, I wish I didn't have to go through all these things like this. I wish we had this foundation. Democracy, if you have just a straight-up democracy, it's two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. When you have a republic, you have laws that govern a country. In theory, maybe not in practice, because in practice it's awesome if it works, but in theory, with the structure of a republic, if you can't just go enforce mob rule on anybody. You have things that are governing documents under which society functions. And so when they want to take an action, they have to, now their rules and their laws that govern those actions. And so a republic is by far safer for its people. And because there's transparency, because the law is out there, because of the transparency of that law, now you can also deal with, if you have unjust laws, you can also deal with them. If you have things that need to be changed, you can also deal with them to make a functional society, to make a just society, to make something that works for everybody. So, you know, when somebody refuses to live under the laws they make for somebody else, there's an indicator that there's something wrong. When people refuse to observe what they expect for other people, there's something wrong. If people are do as I say and not as I do, there's something wrong. A dictatorship is rule by decree. When they do that, there's something wrong. They wouldn't want to live under the very thing that they mandate for other people. So to create a society that is going to work for everyone, you have to be willing to live under the very thing that you're creating for other people. So that is a just society. That is, and that is a republic, which the United States is. The U.S. is not a democracy. It's a democratic republic. You know, you have a people vote, and then they vote for representative leadership that will structure the laws that will be enforced across the country. So you have also an executive branch, a judicial branch, and a legislative branch. The legislative branch being Congress, being the upper and lower houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives. Balance of powers, checks and balances, all those things there. But the founding fathers of the country recognized the need to also empower its citizenry and to ensure that there would be that these checks and balances that weren't just governmental, but these checks and balances that were in the hands of the people, so that the people themselves could be in a position, the strongest position possible, to protect and themselves, their rights, their liberty. Now, the church, the religious institution of the church, weaponized against people to not understand their rights. And this is something that has crept in and it needs to be addressed. Okay, first let's talk historically. Well, historically, if you look back, when it came to some of the worst human rights atrocities that have taken place in leading up to the time that we're in right now, around the world, Stalin, he took the guns away from the people. Mao took the guns away from the people. Hitler took the guns away from the people. These were all steps taken in the process towards tyranny. And, you know, the expectation that, you know, you always have, that systems will always work is not reflective in history, is not reflective in what has taken place before. And you may have a tremendous, wonderful leader today, and tomorrow you may have a tyrant come into power. What? And then you may be a wonderful leader again. But what things are there to bring balance and to bring to keep things at bay, to keep balance, knowing that people are capable of all kinds of things. Governments are capable of all kinds of things. Now, you know, recently, you know, I was having a kind of a back and forth with some friends online on some of these things. And, you know, people have their individual life experiences, which are fine. You know, everybody does. And, you know, and sometimes it's funny because I think, you know, okay, I'm not just, you respect what people's own individual experiences are. That's fine. But recognize the reason that certain things have been done when it comes to rights that were put together for what purposes. One of the reasons that the United States is the nation that it is because of the rights that people fought for and made sure that the generations that would come after them would have. Because of their own experiences that they saw under tyranny, and their own experiences that they saw when certain things were not protected. So they made sure that those rights would be there for the people and would be there for the generations that would come after them. And And so now whether people choose to exercise those rights or not, it's up to them. You can choose to exercise your right of free speech or not. It's up to you. You don't have to use it, but it's there for you. You don't have to, in the United States, you don't have to exercise your Second Amendment right, but it's there for you. And it's there for you for very, very good reason. Now, let's talk a little bit about in the U.S. with there's a thing called a CHL, a concealed handgun license. Did you know that if somebody goes through that process in the United States, that because there's a very good instructor in Austin, Texas that I met, had the privilege of meeting Mr. Michael Cargill, and you know, excellent at what he does. And a really, really heart-wrenching story behind why he got into teaching people and why he got into instructing people. And I tell you, if anybody knew that story and knew what he as a family has gone through to be able to do that, they would really choose their words well in trying to advocate, because for something other than the Second Amendment, because it's clear they don't have a life experience warranting their viewpoint. So, but Mike went through some things very difficult as a family that led him to actually become a teacher. And when somebody gets licensed, you, first of all, if you get licensed, you have stricter sentencing if you do something wrong, because you know the law. You've also studied. You've also had to learn the laws. You also have a proficiency test, so you actually know how to, and you have to have a certain level of proficiency before they will allow you to be licensed. So there's a lot that goes into, and you also have a background check by the FBI. So you are somebody, so if somebody has a CHL, these are the most responsible and clean citizens you have in your society, of anybody that's out there, because it's a lot that goes into it. So this, the demeaning talk towards people that have actually taken responsibility upon themselves to learn the laws, to have some proficiency, and to take responsibility, it's, you know, but then again, too, you're allowed to do that in the States, and a lot of people are allowed to complain. That's fine. They're allowed to abrogate the responsibilities to others that will take care of them. They're allowed to allow other people to watch over them at night. They're allowed to call 911 when there's a problem and have somebody that has a firearm show up at their door to take care of them. That's fine, you know. And at the same time, disregard those very people that do that for them. Disregard the very things that have come before. All right. Let's look at something scripturally, because I know people twist the scriptures without failing to, and fail to understand the context and the history. But let's just look at something in the scripture, shall we? Okay. Okay, this is the book of Acts. Now, this is the post-resurrection world that the early church was living in and the experiences that people were having. So, Acts chapter 20, 22, and let's go verse 21. And he said unto me, depart, for I will send thee far from hence unto the Gentiles. And he gave... And they gave him audience unto this word, and then lifted up their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. This is speaking about Paul when he's testifying before the Sanhedrin. And as they cried out and cast off their clothes and threw dust into the air, the chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging. And he that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. And as they bound him with thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned? When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. Then the chief captain came and said unto him, Tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, yea. And the chief captain answered, with a great sum I obtained this freedom. And Paul said, but I was freeborn. Then straightway they departed from him which should have examined him. And the chief captain was also afraid, after he knew that he was a Roman, because he had bound him. On the morrow, because he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands, and commanded the chief priests and all their council to appear, and brought Paul down and set him before them. And Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him in the mouth. Then said Paul unto him, God will smite thee, thou whited wall, for sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law? And they that stood by revilest thou God's high priest? Then said Paul, I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, Thou shalt not speak evil of the rule of thy people. But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and resurrection of the dead I am called into question. And when he had said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel hath spoken to him, let us not fight against God. And when there arose a great dissension, the chief captains, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, commanded the soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them, and to bring him into the castle. And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul. For as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bearest witness also at Rome. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And they made, and there were more than 40 which made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and elders and said, We have bound ourselves under a great curse, that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. Now therefore, ye with the council signify to the chief captains that he bring him down unto you tomorrow, as though ye would inquire something more perfectly concerning him. And we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him. And when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul. And Paul called one of the centurions with him and said, Bring the young man unto the chief captains, for he hath a certain thing to tell him. For he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul, the prisoner, called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee, who has something to say unto thee. Then the chief captain took him by the hand, and went with him aside privately, and asked him, What is that thou hast to tell me? And he said, The Jews have agreed to desire thee, that thou wouldst bring down Paul tomorrow into the council, as though they were would inquire somewhat of him more perfectly. But do not thou yield unto them. For there lie in wait for him of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, looking for a promise from thee. So the chief captain then let the young man depart and charged him, See that thou tell no man that thou hast shewed these things unto me. And he called unto him two centurions, saying,
make ready 200 soldiers, and go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70 and spearmen 200, and at the third hour of the night, and provide them beasts that they may set Paul on, and bring him safe unto Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner: Claudius Lysias, unto the most excellent governor Felix, send us greetings. This man was taken of the Jews, and should have been killed of them, and then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth into their council, whom I perceived to be accused of questions of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge, worthy of death or of bonds. And when there was told me how that the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent straightway to thee, and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. Then the soldiers, as it were was commanded them, took Paul, and brought him by night to Antipatris. On the morrow they left the horsemen to go with him, and returned to the castle, who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And when he understood that he was of Cilicia, I will hear thee, said he, when thine accusers are also come. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. Okay, goes on from there. But I raise this, and I read this because I just want to spend a little time on some of the things that maybe we don't usually discuss when we go through these scriptures. And these real-life occurrences, these real-life examples of real people going through the real world and living out their assignments that God has given them. Now, in this particular case, you see a lot of things that are coming to bear on Paul being able to carry out his instructions given by God. I mean, one of them was the fact that Paul had a Roman citizenship, which kept him from being flogged, you know, and it's pretty messed up when that kind of thing would happen to you. A lot of people would actually just die from that kind of beating because he'd be ripped apart so badly. But, so right there you've got, you see the politics, you know, Paul dividing and conquering when he sees that there's Sanhedrin, that you've got the Pharisees and the Sadducees together in one place. So he raises a point that is contention between them so that they're at each other and not at him while he's in the middle of that situation. Okay, fine. These are technical details of something that is part of his experience. But in the middle of this, you're surrounded by some incredibly violent people. And the same kind of thing to silence the voice of dissent, to silence the voice of something that people don't want out there is there. To the extent in this case that you've got 40 plus 40 men swearing themselves on an oath that they wouldn't eat or drink until they'd murdered him. Right? I mean, that's extreme. Now, also, too, if they're going to kill Paul, they're going to kill other people as well in the process. Because to get to Paul, if he's under guard, you'd have to kill other people. So it wouldn't have just been Paul. It would have been Paul and anybody else in Paul's way, or in their way of getting to Paul, that they would have ended up killing and murdering. Now, Jesus, you know, well, the Spirit of the Lord, that says that night following, chapter 23, verse 11, and that night following, the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. How did Paul go from Jerusalem to Rome? How did Paul go from Jerusalem to Rome? Was he transported in the middle of the night by an angel? No. He was taken by an armed military escort in the middle of the night armed people by the will of God moved him from place to place so that he could continue on his mission. And to fail to understand that is to fail to understand history, is to fail to understand the world that you live in. And if you've lived in a coddled reality, if you've lived in a situation where you don't have to deal with that kind of thing going on around you every day, it's because other people have created that space for you to have that. But in this case, here, in this situation, now, let me ask you another question too. Is this army looking for a fight? Are these armed men escorting Paul looking for a fight? No. Are they going around trying to brandish their swords and create? No. No, they're not. But they take five times the number of soldiers as the men that have sworn to kill him, plus cavalry, to move him through the middle of it, and move him at what? At a time when it's least likely that there would be a problem or an issue. So the ability to protect, the ability to, is there, but also wisdom is there to avoid that as much as possible. You know, when I was in Haiti, you know, I've been an aid worker all over the world. I've worked in places that are failed countries and just awful situations. And in the work that you do when you're an aid worker, you're under certain guidelines and certain conventions. So, you know, wherever it is that I've gone, you know, and I've in Sri Lanka towards the end of the war, inside the areas that are being bombed and that are the military controlled areas and the horrible things that I've seen, horrible things that I've been around. In all of these situations, I have been unarmed, sent by God, trusting him and his protection, and completely at peace in that. You know, and I remember, you know, when I was in Haiti, yeah, you know, you're sleeping on the ground for months. Now, in the middle of that situation too, I'm very grateful that there was, you know, camping outdoors in the middle of a very difficult situation. I'm grateful that there was a guy with a shotgun guarding the facility at night, hired security. Because you know why? Because you need those things in those kind of places, so that you can actually sleep at night, and so that you don't wake up in the middle of the night to being robbed. Which did happen in other facilities. Okay? So those are things that are there. These are realities of life. You have to understand you have to grow up and understand what's actually going on. Of course, people that trust God and they go into whatever it is that God sends them into, of course that's there. But when you have rights, now this is what's awesome about the U.S. These rights were actually put there for the people, and they have them. And they came at an incredible price in that country. You don't have these in other places. And when the power is not in the hands of the people, you see the level of abuse that can take place. And it is happening all over the world. It's happening. The level of abuse that takes place when the people don't have power. You want to put your best, you want to hope for the goodwill of a tyrant, or you want to hope for the goodwill of somebody that doesn't have your best interest at heart? Okay, you can do that. But when people have gone before to try to give you that space, so that the people themselves can have and take responsibility for their own communities, that's not something to be taken lightly. And it's a very few places in the world that actually have that. Now, there's been a lot of people that are on the side of the enemy that have tried to get people to not understand history, to not understand scripture, to not understand the reason for the rights that they have, and to try to take them away from them. And this is why it's very important, particularly if you're in the United States, to recognize the rights that you have and the reasons that you have them. Because they were given to you for important reasons. So don't fall for the weaponized narrative, which obviously right now you can see for yourself is being censored. So particular narratives are the only things that you get if you use centralized big tech communication platforms, which I think as time goes on will diminish more and more in their importance because people want to actually have a conversation and they want to have an adult conversation and they don't want to be censored. So I think they're doing a lot of damage to themselves by trying to control people's thought processes and trying to control people's narratives. But it's important to recognize. Listen, if you want to discount the entire Old Testament and New Testament and what has come before and all that's there, even Jesus in the garden, okay? Now, the scriptures even that are around that, Jesus was on his way for something specific. He was here for a reason. And when he was being arrested and his servants were, they were going to try to use force to try to protect him. And Jesus said, don't you recognize that at this moment, I can ask my Father. He'll send 12 legions of angels to basically decimate these guys. But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled? And he healed the servant of the high priest whose ear had gotten cut off by Peter. It's a lot of things that are going on in that situation. But Jesus was here to fulfill something. He said, no man takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord only to take it up again. Jesus came on a mission. And he fulfilled his mission to the T. So that is the life that he lived out while he was here. But at the same time, too, the reality that everybody's been living in here in this world, the very first person that the outpouring of the Spirit was upon in the Gentiles was a centurion. A centurion, which is a man with 100 guys with guns or weapons under his control. God, throughout history, has been involved in all these aspects. And the recognition that we live in a turbulent world is there. Now, you trust God. Great. You believe him. Amazing. Wonderful. And you should. But also you have to listen. And also, so when Jesus, when before 70 AD happened and the destruction of Jerusalem, Jesus told people, he said, look, when you see the armies coming, when you see these things he said, get out of the city. Don't participate in what's about to happen there. Now, people could have stuck around in there and said, oh, no, we're trusting God. No, that was Josephus, the historian, when he recorded the siege that took place in 70 AD. It was one of the worst sieges that ever took place in the recorded history. The kind of atrocities that took place inside that city were unspeakable. I mean, you're talking about people eating babies, just to try to survive. You're talking about there's nothing available because there was no food. They were cut off. And Jesus warned people. He said, he warned people about what it was going to be. And those that listened to him and those that heard his words were spared from that. And those that refused to listen to him and refused to listen to those words were not. Thank goodness, thank God for the founding fathers of the country of the United States. Yeah, they had their problems, they had their issues, they had things but there were some things that they gave the people of that country that have allowed for that nation to be what it is. And the Second Amendment is one of those. And so for anybody that's living in that country that enjoys the rights and the privileges that that nation has afforded them. Recognize that you live in that country and you have those privileges and you have the ability to even complain because of the rights that were given to that country in the first place to allow for its foundation. Think about that. And think about all the people that make sure that you are safe, in the natural, that do the work, the escorts of Paul that make sure that he can get from one destination to another, that take him out from being ripped apart in front of the Sanhedrin. Think about all those people that do that thanklessly, thankless work, no named, but they do that, and they do that so that you can have your testimony and drink your latte and go on in your life. So I say these things just because you have to recognize that there's a lot of people that are out there. There's a lot of people with a lot of experiences. And you need to recognize their experiences. And if you've got responsible, caring, loving people that recognize the rights that they have in a country like the United States, God bless them. And if you don't agree with them, that's your right. But do so respectfully, because they respect you, even if you don't know what you're saying or what you're talking about. All right. So say that to just say God bless you guys. We love you. Drop us an email, faithmix@gmail.com. Always love to hear from you. God bless you. We'll talk to you again sometime, again, very soon, as always. Keep on keeping on. All right. Bye.